Hello and welcome to Woodman Corner, the West Bromwich Albion podcast brought to you by Baggies fans at the Birmingham Mail. I'm Graham Brown, this is Joe Chapman.
Hello.
How are you? I'm doing alright, yeah, all the better for this podcast which I've been going on and on and on about for ages, so really excited that, that people will be joining us for this. Just start by introducing what we're going to be doing. This isn't going to be like any other Albion podcast that's out there now. This is about storytelling. This is about going out to former players, current players, staff, fans, and asking them all the same question. What is your favourite story about West Bromwich Albion? You're not going to hear an awful lot about should we have got a penalty in the last game or who should we pick in the next game. That's not what really this is about. This is an Albion storytelling medium where we get people to come in and tell us why they love the club, the funny stuff that's happened at the club, and that kind of thing. It's going to be good, isn't it?
I'm really, really looking forward to it. Yeah, we've got some really, really good guests lined up already, and we've obviously recorded a few already, and it sounds fantastic. There's a lot of people that are really embracing it, so yeah, let the fun begin.
And one of the things I wanted to say is that I hope you enjoyed this podcast. This is our first one. If you enjoy it, get involved. This is about fans, this is about storytelling, so you can find us on Twitter, on email and so on, and get in touch. Equally, if you think it's rubbish, come and help us make it better. This is our Albion podcast, for better or for worse. What we're going to be doing today is our first ever guest is going to be Andy Johnson, one of my favourite players as a younger man and a star of our promotion team and our Great Escape team. He's got some amazing stories to tell about his time in the Albion dressing room, as well as really heartening chat about how much Albion matters to him. After that, we're going to be looking back to the last game. We're not going to do this that often, but at Huddersfield, as it happened, our Joe here was here and had some fairly strident things to say about it. I think that's fair to say.
I was in the away end. And it was, yeah, there were a lot of strong opinions from a lot of Albion fans as well. It wasn't just a case of myself. I think it was a consensus for the first time, really. I think you could say that it was a general feeling. It's been a fan base that's been long divided, I think, and yet that was the first time I've seen the majority of Albion fans kind of come together with one strong opinion.
Yeah, it's certainly not a happy ship at the moment. But anyway, first of all, we're gonna be talking to Andy Johnson. So here is his answer to our question: what is your favourite story about West Bromwich Albion? To put some context. We stood there in his garden next to his ducks, and I would particularly urge you to listen out to when he orders his ducks to be quiet. You'll notice they really listen.
So one of the things that we hope to do with this podcast is try and give people kind of an insight into the club, often as was, because I don't think players now could necessarily talk kind of freely about it. But the question what we plan to ask everyone is, what's your favourite story related to West Bromwich Albion? Can you think of a time there, something that fondly happened?
Millions. I mean, absolutely millions of them.
I can sense you're trying to work out the ones you're allowed to say.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do, yeah, without trying to edit it. I mean, one of the ones, Jonathan Greening, when he signed, was like, Jono's one of my closest mates, and he's as mad as a box of frogs. You know, I love him to bits, and we were in Portugal on a pre-season, and we were like, God, it's hot in it. And he said, yeah, it was a different sun, innit? And he thought there was two suns, you know, and you know, there were, we had like these houses, and there was four in a house, and girls, shut up. And there was me and Jono sharing a room, and there was Paul Robinson and all sharing a room, and we were playing Scrabble. And Jono is just, yeah, he ain't thick, he's just stupid and says stupid things. So I've got one three-letter word, thug, F-U-G, thug. And well, I had to leave the room, and me and Jono and Robbo, you know, absolutely screaming. And we had a writer's dinner award, and Mago asked me and Derek McInnes to go along, so we were sat on different tables and stuff like that. Anyway, we come back in the next day, and Mago, hey, all right, lads, meeting in the dressing room. He says, oh, Derek, Jono, have a good night last night? Yeah, not too bad, Gaffer. Oh, really, did you? Like that sort of thing. And so you might have to edit that. He said, The MD of Coca-Cola was sponsoring the league or something at the time. We had a table photograph and I'm sat there with my V's up and stuff like that. I ruined the picture and he wasn't very happy. But I mean, I sat next to Bully that night. We had a great night. I mean, there's the one where I had to show me bum in Rackham. Well, the lad showed his bum in Rackham's window if I'd scored a goal, and I showed me bum on the pitch. And, you know, it's just absolutely just crazy, crazy memories. You know, it's like when... what's his bloody name now? Nookie Bear, we used to call him, because his eyes are like that. Trevor Benjamin.
Yes.
When he signed in that, back then you always played cards. I mean, I was talking to Mora the other day and the lads have all got their electrical gadgets and their headphones on. Now he's after a win, he said the coach is just silent because everyone's on their gadgets. But we used to sit and play cards and Trevor, his eyes were, he was boss-eyed and I don't know whether he could see at all, to be honest. And you'd play cards and you'd tell him sort of trumps were spades. And he was putting clubs down because he couldn't see, you know, he knew it was black, but he didn't know what one it was. And we used to fleece him all the time, you know. Oh, Trev's on, come on, let's play cards because you take all his money off him, like, you know. Just so many great times. And all the staff at the club, you know, and were just different class, you know. And it's, you know, there's still a few up there. I mean, I got quite a member of the WBA FPA, West Bromwich Albion Football Players Association, and I go up and do bits in the lounges now and again, and you know, I speak to Martin now and again, and started doing quite a lot of different charity events and sort of doing a table Q&As and things like that now, which is fantastic. And people say, "Oh, thanks ever so much. Do you want anything?" You don't want anything for doing it. You know, it's like I said to you earlier. I love sharing my experiences, because that's, forget about the money side of things, because, you know, it's, everyone says about the money sort of nowadays, but the money was great when we were playing compared to what the man in the street was earning. The money was great when Sir Bobby Charlton and George Best were playing compared to, you know, unfortunately for them guys, they never had the infrastructure of like the PFA or guidance to how to look after it, whereas we did, and these lads don't have to, you know, they can do what they like. But the best thing that I've ever took out of it is just the whole thing. Just such an honour and a privilege to play for every single club I was at. You know, my fondest memories are at West Brom because of what we did and the rapport we had with the supporters and stuff like that. And, you know, and we won the championship with Nottingham Forest and had great times there. But West Brom will always be sort of the number one sort of... achievement in my career.
I'm glad actually that the history of it isn't lost here, because I mean, it really was a turning point. You know, Forest weren't as awful as we were before then; they're not as good as we are after.
That's
it,
right.
Really was a turning point for a club, for a generation, kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. You know, and if, like I said, that's what people say. You know, and you don't really appreciate it or understand it or think about it until you retire and you look back over your career and you think, you know, and people are saying these things and you think, bloody hell. You know, and it's like, yeah, we did. Well, we must have started something. We must have done something. You know, and again, a fantastic honour. You know, I love going up to the club and I love seeing the fans and chatting to them. And you know, I live in amongst them now around here, so it's nice. You know, you bump into them in the street and stuff like that. And we went to my little girl's friend at school's birthday party, and one of the mums was chatting to and. She went in with my partner and she come back out because she said to my partner, "I'm going up the Albion." It was Man City game. She went, "Bloody hell, I didn't know you were Andy Johnson." I went, "Yeah, well, I have put a couple of pounds down." I said, "But my hair's a bit short." I said, "Bloody hell, oh, can we have a picture? Oh, I wish my dad was here." And that's fantastic. Yeah. You know, even sort of, 15 years later, you still kind of remembered.
Oh, well. What a bloke.
Yeah, that was amazing. I rang him up and said, you know, we want him to help the podcast. He said, "Yeah, great, do you want to come over now?" I was at his house half an hour after it started. Really, really good bloke. What do you think?
I thought it was brilliant. It was a great interview. He's very, very easygoing, isn't he? He's part of a generation of players, perhaps the last generation of players to really kind of, you know, just embrace interviews. And I suppose, in fairness to the current crop, you know, in 10 years' time, they may also be quite open to it. But for now, it's all very... you know, reserve, media trained and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, we talked about that a lot. He's someone who he's got a lot of real affinity with the club, and you know, he's aware that he was probably at the end of an era where people didn't know him quite so much now, although he had no complaints about pay whatsoever, but that he was in an
era where he's still involved at the club, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. But he was just really glad that he was able to talk and engage with the fans. Incidentally, this is now an open invitation to Jonathan Greening, Trevor Benjamin, whoever else wants to come on our podcast and have their say back at what they think about Andy Johnson. Anyway, here is the end of that interview, the remainder of it, in which he talks about his love for the club, his approach to games and so on. It was really, really fascinating, so hope you enjoy it.
We're just talking a bit about what you're doing now. Why not stay in football? What made you make a big break?
When I come to the end of my career, I ended up at King's Lynn, which was a great opportunity for me to go into the coaching management side of things. So I went there as a player. My old youth team manager, where it all started, Norwich, Keith Webb, got me up there. Unfortunately, Webby got sacked, as managers generally do. I then got asked to take over with Carl Eggs, old West Brom. He was the manager, and I was the assistant manager, although, if you know Ego, I did most of the bloody work. But I was also still playing. But it was a great way to get into management because, you know, there's so many great managers out there without jobs. Yeah. It's really difficult unless you want to go through the academy way, which, you know, one of my great friends, Darren Moore, has done that.
Yeah.
And he's done great. That wasn't for me. I didn't want to start again at the bottom. And I've got my own kids. And nowadays, we've played a few charity games, listening to a few of the lads that are doing it that way, they find it very, very difficult because football's changed so much and it's so new, and you've got to watch what you say, basically. And
yeah.
I've never been very good at that.
Do you know, I was thinking about this on the drive up, because I think, like, I mean, you were obviously part of the Premier League era and a professional's professor. You were clearly very fit and etc. etc. But I still got the impression that you lived a life, that you were capable of being a non-footballer, of answering a question and going out when you go out and so on.
Yeah, football's really changed, and you know, wouldn't want to be a footballer now, because that's just outrageous to say that. You'd want to be a footballer at any time.
Yeah.
You know, it's still the most amazing profession. I wouldn't call it job because it's not a job. but then I do feel for those lads. I mean, it's famous enough to, when you bump trolleys with somebody in Tesco's, they recognised you, but not so famous it intruded onto your sort of personal life. You could still be yourself. You could talk to supporters and fans, and you know, nowadays I think the fans think that players are a bit arrogant or ignorant even. But they're just worried that they might say the wrong thing and that gets blown out of proportion. And so that's why they kind of stand off and distance themselves a little bit, because especially with smartphones and things like that nowadays, something could be so innocuous, but it could be blown, you know, a picture, it depends how that's taken, doesn't it, you know, or how something's said, you know, if you text somebody, that can be misconstrued as, is somebody having a go when really they're not, because there's no tone in it. It's really difficult for them right now, and it will be forever, but, you know, saying that, there's got to be some downsides to the job.
I was going
to
say,
don't feel too bad for them, nor should anybody else. I mean, you know, that's the career they've chosen, and or not chosen, it chose them, you know, and it's just amazing. I mean, you just got to enjoy it while it's there, because you know it ain't there forever and it goes quick.
Well, so thank you for coming on to our podcast, and the whole thing about the podcast really is to talk. You kind of segue me to what we're kind of all about, really. It's just about talking about what it's like to be a footballer and the best moments and worst moments. So, can you remember that? I mean, it seems like you really appreciate the fact that you got a life as a footballer. Can you remember any low times?
Of course, yeah, there are low times, you know, and they're not all pre-season training, you know. You can be in a huge game that, you know, and you know, you've lost it. Now that people might say is just, well, it's only a game, but it's not. It's a religion, you know, and it's like somebody praying and God not talking to them. And you know, that's a low. When the players lose, it's a low. I mean, a lot of times nowadays, people see players on the pitch and they think, oh, you know, they don't care. I was talking to a couple of fans the other week about local derbies aren't quite the same anymore, and you know, things like that. But they do care, and it does hurt. You know, and they are lows. I mean, that year we got promoted to the Premier League for the first time. I mean, how do you think everybody at Wolverhampton felt? that we gunned them down.
Yeah.
You know, with the, so many games left and they were so far ahead. I mean, you know, as much as we live on that for the rest of our lives, they're remembered for that for the rest of their lives. You know, and that's a low. Scoring an own goal in a cup final and losing, or making a mistake and losing, you know, it's a low, isn't it?
And but is it a short-term thing? So, I mean, that's, you know, you lose a game or something, but do you carry it around with, would you constantly be carrying that around with you?
It stays with you forever, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can remember, you know, highs and lows and you know, throughout my career, you know, definitely. And it's... Some of them are not in your control. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... The euphoria of getting promoted to the Premier League that season... was unbelievable, but when you twisted it round and thought the reality of it, we should never have been there. It wasn't our time, you know.
Yeah.
It should never have happened. The club wasn't geared for it. Yeah. But where'd you start? You know, and now they are, and they're established. And you know, nowadays when the pundits at the beginning of the season all put their favourites up, West Brom are nowhere near even in sight of it.
Yeah,
you know, and that has to start somewhere.
It started there,
and it started there. Yeah. So we went up, we come down. We went up, we come down. We went up. We had the great escape. And that is built and built and built the club into, you know, that's not me saying that, that's what people have said over the years. I mean, Martin Swain I know really well now, and, you know, a lot of people around the club, and that's their take on what happened. And,
I mean, there's no question. I mean, I spoke Albion started in 1987. They were nothing but terrible until 2000 came around. And
well, we were terrible. We weren't a good team, and I'd never. And if you
wouldn't want to play you though, would you?
Oh, you wouldn't. And that was what it was. That was such a unique and special time because there were no stars in our team. There were 11. Well, not 11. The subs. We had a squad of 18, 20, and every single one of them was of the same mentality and the same breed and the same sort of culture. And we had one thing in our mind, and that was it. You know, and it wasn't pretty, but fans can forgive you for not being pretty if they see you giving everything, which. We absolutely 100% did every week, and we won.
Yeah,
we got one goal, and that was it.
Yes.
Shop, tin hats on, dig the trenches, soak up like a sponge, and that was it. And that, whether right or wrong, that was where it was at. But that's what we had to do because we never had a team full of stars. You know, we had Jason Roberts up front, and Deesh or Dobes or, you know, someone like that. It was get the ball to Jason. Just he had about five on his back. And just let him hold it just to give us a breather, you know? And that was how it was. And if it came to the back, you had Lars Sigurdsson, Gilly and Big Dave, and you ain't getting past that. That's just like a block of concrete, you know? And in the midfield, you had the Dogs of War, which just snapped and bit and, you know, just did everything they could just to, you know, protect them and get the ball up there and now and again chip in with a goal. And that was so unique that I don't think you'll ever see anything like that again, really.
Did you? One of the things I always wanted to ask you, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, in your own house with your chickens here watching us, you've made me a nice cup of tea inside.
Hey, for ducks.
Yeah, sorry, ducks. I'm a very city boy. I always thought you're always everywhere and always talking and so on. Do you approach the game trying to get some kind of a psychological one over on the players that you're playing against sometimes?
No, not at all. My talking was never to the player I was playing against. You know, it was never wind-up stuff. I was old-school kind of player, you know, going back to where there was no cameras in the tunnels, and if you said, I'll see you in the after the game, you saw them after the game, and that was it. Nowadays, that don't happen because there's cameras everywhere. So it was never to wind them up. And I always had a great rapport with most players I was playing with. Sometimes you get a young kid who come in and just try and never chirp off, and they were a bit, you know, flashy and that. But no, never. And you know, most of the lads that, you know, I still speak to now, if I went in for a tackle, it would be 100% fair. It'd be hard, but it'll be fair, and I'd go in to win the ball. I remember a challenge. Darren Bullock, a lad who I used to play against, was at Huddersfield. I know Bully. He lives in Worcester now. Some of the battles I had with him, I played against Steve McMahon when he was at Swindon. You know, Terry Urlock when he was at Southampton, and Mark Hughes and Paul Wince, you know, people like that. I mean, they were hard. Roy Keane, you know, hard players. I got a picture up there, and they haven't been out for years. It's me, I was at Forest at the time, and there's Tony Adams, Mark Young. Animals. Animals, but fair. If you were going in for a tackle with them, you went in because you knew they were coming in, but you never went in high, you never went in with studs up, you went in and you went in hard because you knew they were going to do the same. And it was fair. You know, and that's how that whole squad were. They were good, hard-working, fair, good lads. And that's why I think that that whole squad will always be remembered by the supporters and took into their hearts, like, you know.
Did it change over the time you were there? Because obviously the team got, I mean, it was always kind of a hard working team and stuff, but it started to get more sophisticated. You got other names on. Did the ethos change?
Of course, you never try and change the ethos of anything. I can't remember which manager it was now, but it was a sensible one. I mean, it might have been Ron Atkinson. Said that, you know, when you go on that pitch, or it might be Mego, probably was a Mego saying it, they can't stop you running and trying. You know, they can't stop that. Mm-hmm. And that should be the fundamentals for any team. You look at the top teams, you know, all right, not last night because, you know, Real were terrible, but Tottenham weren't. Mm-hmm. They closed down. They closed down first and foremost. They closed down. Why do you think, you know, that great little Conte, is it Chelsea? He's a, by his own admission, and he is a good player, but he ain't a naturally gifted, talented player. But he don't have to do the other side, and you've got to have that. And that's got to be what everything's built on. All managers, the old sort of, they always go back to basics and defending, set that up, and if you do that right, the rest of it will look after itself. And, you know, and as long as, you know, fans, certainly now, it ain't cheap, and fans pay a lot of money to go and watch the game. The least they deserve is to see that the players are trying.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're not, then God help the player. You know, I give the ball away loads of times, but they never got on my back because they could see I was trying.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll forgive you that. They're human beings, and so are the players, you know. But if you're going to be out there giving it Larry Big Licks and not producing, then, you know, it's going to cause trouble.
Okay, it's an interesting time that kind of makes it here. And obviously, you knew Gary before you came to club, you played with him. But it seemed like a divisive time where it pushed everyone to their absolute limits, and some people couldn't cope with it, and some
that's
could.
Absolutely right. And yeah. if that's how it looked from the outside, that's exactly how it was. it was, when we got promoted, I went home and I slept for 3 days. You know, I never went out partying because mentally and physically I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, because it took that much mental strength to get up for every game 2 a week, you know, and to have that mindset of we've got to catch these, we've got to get promoted, we're this close, all that hard work, we ain't going to throw it away. And that was every player. There was no let's go out in town afterwards and let's do this and let's do that. It was everybody went home to their own houses. Mm-hmm. We all had a few days, then we come back and then we had a bit of a party then, you know. But it was that intense. And you ask any manager or player that's ever won anything, it's you've got to be concentrating 100%, not just while you're at training, not just while you're playing a game, but when you're at home, 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You've got to be doing everything right, because if you're not, you don't achieve that. You know, you don't. And that is just the bottom line. The stories are passed down, you know, and I love sharing. Graham Williams is one of the greatest up there. I mean, I know Graham really well because I was with Wells and he was the assistant manager of Bobby Gould. And Graham is so passionate about West Bromwich Albion Football Club, as most of the ex-players are. And to hear him speak about it with such love is the only way you can describe it. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. But that's, for me and for him, that's not what we achieved at the club. That's how the club embraced us and took us in. You know, you can't love that table if that table, you know, you can love it, but if that table don't love you back, it ain't special. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you've got a rapport with the supporters and the football club and some of the people that have died up there, that, you know, it's such a tragic loss to that football club. Mm-hmm. And that's the special thing. And, you know, that I don't know if that'll ever happen again, because like we said earlier, it's difficult for the players now, and the fans don't always understand that, but I think they're kind of coming round to it. I mean, these kids are, they're superstars.
Yeah,
you know, they are. And they have to be so careful, and whereas we didn't really have to be that careful. We were in the Premier League, but we weren't the elite players in the Premier League anyway. You know, we'd go on holiday, and if there was a West Brom fan there, he'd recognise you. But apart from that, you got left alone pretty much most of the time, you know. So yeah, very, very, very special time.
Forgive me, because I don't absolutely remember the different managers that you'd have worked under. Obviously, you came under Gary. There'd have been Brian and Safter. What do you remember about the changes,
Brian,
of managers?
Yeah,
and so
just
on?
Mego and Brian Robson. Yeah, Mego was, like we said, he had his way, and if you couldn't, you know, it's the classic, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen, and players couldn't, you know. Rightly or wrongly, that was his style. Mm-hmm. You know, how can I criticise the bloke who did what he did at the football club? I wouldn't. It worked with me.
Yeah.
You know, I could handle it, and so could most of the players, but it wasn't for everybody. And he has got his critics. He's come back again now.
Yes.
And I've spoke to him a couple of times, and I think he has gone away and reflected and perhaps...
mellowed a bit.
Not mellowed, just understood that the game's changed, it's evolved, and, you know, it's moved on, and you have to have more than, you know, one way of doing it. You know, and different players, some players respond to a kick up the backside, other players need an arm around them, you know, and some players are quite secretive and you might not know what problems they've got. So you have to take all these things into account.
So you don't reckon the 2017 generation is getting the 2002 treatment?
No. I mean, I laugh because I've been up there a few times this season and he comes out the tunnel and he rolls his sleeves up and that's the old Mego and his hand's gone. And I think, here we go, rocket time. And then he goes, oh, yeah, I can't, you know. And I spoke to him and said, oh, how are you getting on? Because it must be, well, he's gone from, and there's different people. There's coaches that can never be a manager and there's managers that could never be a coach.
Yeah.
And for Gary to have done that transition is testament to how much he's probably reflected and looked on his time as manager to be able to come in and do the coaching role, you know. And it's not too difficult for him, but it's different.
Yeah,
you know,
haven't been all consuming in his first year.
Yeah, and sometimes you see him go back to manager role, and then he realizes that, you know, Tony's the manager and he's there to support, and, you know, and he's the assistant manager, and, you know, but what a fantastic setup now, you know. And, yeah, and I've been up a few times and played some good stuff. I mean, the last game I went up at Watford, oh god, what a you know, I've never sat and watched football because I just don't really like watching it too much, you know.
You strike me as the sort of person who want to get involved.
You do, and it's difficult, you know, my head's going, my legs are going, and it's hard. I don't know how fans do it. I'd be bold and grey. I mean, I'm a little bit grey, but I've still got a bit of air. You know, nail biting. It killed me to sit there and watch it. And, you know, from the seat, you can see so much. I mean, the best players in the world are sat in a stand, aren't they? You know, but on the pitch, things are different. But, yeah, absolutely fantastic. And I went into the manager's room afterwards and saw Gary and met Jerry Francis, who's, you know, who's a bit of a hero of mine because of supporting Bristol Rovers as well, where I grew up. All my family are still in Bristol, so yeah. And how much the club's changed. I mean, you know, I couldn't find the way around.
No,
you know, the dress rooms and you know, all that sort of thing, and it's fantastic that I'm still part of that now through the former Players Association. I mean, I took the girls that were only six out on the pitch. They were just so excited, but to me it was like, but I don't understand it, you know. But you forget, and behind the in the East Stand, up the corridors behind the boxes, there's like pictures of you from that era, sort of thing. Yeah. And it's like, bloody hell, you're ingrained in the history of this football club.
Yeah.
You know, and my girls are going, is that you? I'm going, yeah. You know, look, is that you? Yeah. Is that you with the champagne, you know, spraying it over someone's face? Yeah. You know, and it just brings back some great memories, some fantastic memories.
Well, it's been really good to chat with. But if I can ask one final question, so you talked to me about Jono. Okay, who are the other people you've stayed in touch with? The people you still mates with?
Well, like I said, I see Jono, Paul Robinson. His boy plays for in the Blues Academy, and yeah, my best pal, his boy plays there as well. So I see Robbo now and again at different games when I go and watch. Greggs usually phones me up when he's had a few beers on a Saturday night, and you don't you touch me down the phone kind of, you know, messages. I see Horace quite a bit, Bob all the time. Like I said, I've been doing some charity work. I don't like calling it charity, it's just going to functions and helping raise money for, you know, people that are a little less unfortunate than yourselves, and, you know, to take a few hours out of your day to, you know, kind of do something that you enjoy, talking about great times at, you know, our special club, then that's a pleasure. So I've seen quite a few of the lads there, Burge, and you know, you know, keep in touch, and you know, it's lovely to be sort of back involved in on a different side.
I think it's quite a nice thought for Albion fans that those sorts of people, yourself, Bob, and someone still see each other. It's I'm not sure that era will ever be kind of replicated again. Really, you know, they are players that you can kind of associate with that stayed there for a certain period.
The club was it the 10-year anniversary of it, put a dinner on which was lovely, and you know perhaps there'll be a 20-year anniversary, you know, and we can all get back together again, you know. Yeah. I mean, Yuzi only lives up the road here. I see him about. It's fantastic to see the lads and, you know, just enjoy reminiscing, really. I mean, you know, we haven't seen Igor too much, but he's probably back home now.
So absolute final question. What happens now? If Bristol Rovers play the Albion, you're not going to be sat there watching because you want to go
on. Well, pre-season, yeah, generally.
So who do you want to win now?
You see, that's an horrible question because I grew up in Bristol. I mean, I went to the last ever game at the Wembley of the West, we used to call it, Eastfield Stadium. I had the track running. I remember my dad ripping up the railings, going, me and my brother run on and touch the goalpost.
Is that right?
That was the last ever game. And we grew up, you know, we used to walk miles to each, you know, to the stadium and back. And then Albion is, you know, it's where my home is, where my heart is, you know. So I'd go for a 5-5 draw so that it's nice and exciting for everybody.
Yeah, I don't think Tony Pulis would be involved with that one.
So Andy Johnson, what a man. Really, really enjoyed that. I'd really like to thank him. I rang him up sort of saying, I've got nothing to offer you, but can you come on and tell your stories? And God, just couldn't wait to tell his stories, really.
It does seem like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? You know, you think of, it was 12 years ago, 13 years ago or so, when Gary Megson was leading Albion to a promotion, and we all know what followed after that, the Great Escape, and etc. And Johnson, you know, kind of experienced all of that.
Well, that's John. I touched on it now. It's all kind of come around, really, in that, you know, he remembers Gary Megson as this massively divisive, bombastic person that was kind of, you either live with his passion and intensity, or you were kind of kicked out. And he recognised that even Gary Megson has come round full circle now and understood that, you know, you just can't be that kind of person anymore. It was a long time ago. It was a defining time for Albion, but also for football.
It was a different dressing room as well, wasn't it? I mean, you think of Johnson, you think of John O'Green, and as he's touched on already, Paul Robinson, yeah, Jeff Horsfield, Kevin Campbell. You know, slightly before perhaps for in terms of Great Escape, yeah. But you know, these kind of players, tight knit. You can imagine it was a dressing room that had a lot of fun and, you know, probably quite a lot of mischief, but it was a highly spirited one.
Yeah, it was. He was just absolutely. He just couldn't talk enough about his time. And actually, I went there to talk to him for 20 minutes. We ended up having three cups of tea and talking for kind of 2 hours. Don't ever get him on Jason Kumas. He'll chew ears off about what a brilliant player he was. Anyway, talking about things that are less that are brilliant, let's talk about Huddersfield this weekend. So
it's just the polar opposite, isn't it? The current day, I mean, Albion now have expectation on their shoulders. You rewind 12 years ago, for example, when survival would have been a real, true achievement, we perhaps take it for granted now. It just feels almost like there's a tide change, you know, in that we need to kind of think of the next thing to aspire to. You know, we've almost worn out survival in terms of that being going to satisfy the Albion fan base.
But isn't it, though? I mean, so that's the thing. Let me play Jason Mohammed here. You can play Albion fan, isn't it? Why is it reasonable for Albion fans, you know, en masse on social media now, to be calling for Tony Pulis? Is that because it feels reasonable? Why is it?
I think 12 months ago, it was around 12 months ago now that Albion beat Leicester and kicked off 3 or 4 months of form that I don't think we've witnessed really in the Premier League, in Albion's Premier League era, mm-hmm. where we've been able to knit together, I don't know, what was it, maybe 30 points or so that we got in those 4 months, beating teams comfortably at home, scoring goals, offering loads of a threat from wide, a lot of creativity, relatively solid at the back, didn't quite keep as many clean sheets as the year before or the year before that. But we were almost sacrificing that to go a bit more gung-ho almost in the final third. And we just seem to have regressed in the last 6 to 9 months. We just seem to have gone backwards. Incidentally, the squad has probably, on the whole, probably improved in that time. I think a lot of Albion fans would accept that.
I've been vocally up for Tony Pulis for quite a long time now, because I've always felt like when it comes to it and he leaves, the odds of relegation are going to fall down, and very quickly that kind of Alan Irvine mentality of right, well, we just pray for some form of pragmatism that will return. But I think the weekend was a bit of a turning point for me. I think
that was the clearest indication yet that the Albion fan base almost had just a common opinion of it. But certainly the fans that were there, mm-hmm. and the fans on social media. In situations like this with Albion, with the run the wrong, you're not going to hear too much of the Albion fan base that are pro-Pulis. It's going to be totally the opposite way. But despite that, I still think it's now becoming more of a anti-Pulis than, you know, split down the middle.
Certainly on social media, that's evident. And one would think that that given the response of the crowd on the weekend, that's probably replicated there. Yeah.
I don't think Albion fans are unreasonable. You know, we're not expecting a Leicester City repeat or even, you know, a top 10 finish. I think Albion fans would take 12th place and 45 points a season if it meant playing football that had an intent to it.
Or even just enjoying going to games
just
again.
A bit of ambition. Yeah, just enjoying the game. Thinking, wow, actually, do you know what? I came away from that thing. That was actually not a bad game. And Albion's style of play is, you know, is of a good standard.
Well, this is something that we're going to be continuing to return to on Pub and Corner. Next time around, we have the journalist who knows Tony Pulis better than anyone else. So we'll be asking him questions about it. We'll also look at our biggest disappointments of the season so far. We've got some phenomenal guests coming up. I really don't want to give them away, but you just wait to see who's coming.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be so good.
It's going to be brilliant. So keep tuning. Thanks for joining us the first time, and on to next time at Wooden Corner.
Thank you.